Hello and welcome to the Farming Advice Service podcast. This podcast and the next in our series are in a slightly different format to our usual interview style, as we're putting the audio from our recent succession webinar into a podcast format, so you can listen to it on the go if you prefer that to attending a webinar or watching a recording. A link to the full webinar recording and the links to some succession planning resources can be found in the podcast description and on our website, farmingadviceservice.org.uk. We hope you find this podcast interesting and informative. Thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to this webinar on succession planning, navigating the future of your farm, delivered by the Farming Advice Service on behalf of DEFRA. I'm Laura Harpham. I'm the Programme Manager for the Farming Advice Service and I'll be hosting today. I'm joined by Heather Wildman of Saviour Associates. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Heather and she'll introduce herself to us and talk to us about succession planning. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you, Laura, and thank you everybody for joining us today. So succession, one day son, daughter, darling, this will all be yours. And will it be something that will be delighted and make our dreams come true? And every day we spring out of bed and we can't believe we're getting to live our dream. Or if we'd known this is what succession was going to be, we would have run for the hills. And sadly, for many, many families, we don't talk about it. It's a difficult topic. And whose role is it to bring it up? Is it the incoming generation? You know, to start expressing their interests about what they want to do, where they want to be, but often they don't want to bring it up because they feel a bit uncomfortable, a bit greedy, a bit grand, and ultimately it does mean someone may die. Or is it their exiting generation? Is it, you know, your role to bring it up to say, look, you know, we're looking to retire, we want to take a step back, who is going to step forward and take on the business? But they often don't want to bring it up because, you know, the farming's hard, it's not always the greatest income, long hours, you know, they may view that their children have got good careers, they don't want to clip their wings and pull them in shorter. So ultimately, nobody brings it up. And for me, my whole legacy is to enable more and more people to have this conversation sooner. The sooner you start the conversation, open things up, the more open and honest you can be, and people can prepare and plan. To give you a little bit of a caveat in here, for many people, when they attend or go to succession workshops, it's often delivered by a tax specialist, but that's inheritance tax planning. It's not necessarily succession planning. So yes, my disclaimer is I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an accountant, I'm not a solicitor, I'm not a bank manager, a land agent. I have no legal training whatsoever, but what I am trained in is family facilitation and helping people navigate immediate their succession. So how are you feeling? It's been quite a turbulent time, hasn't it? And I always think, you know, we've got to be careful of getting sucked into negative narratives. And I think we have to start thinking about what is it we're doing and why are we doing it? And farming has so many answers to so many of the problems that our industry, our country and our communities are going through. And I think it's a real opportunity for us to sort of stand tall instead of just saying we're just a farmer. And I think we have a lot more opportunities ahead of us than we have for many other sectors out there. And, you know, our reputation of farming, oh, we work so hard, we get up before we've gone to bed. No one works as hard as a farmer. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people work really, really hard. And there's a lot of like Joe and Joyce Public, you know, they're struggling everywhere they go. There's increases in costs and challenges for them. So I think we really need to think, especially if we are hoping our sons and daughters, nieces and nephews and families are going to get behind us and actually want to take on our businesses. We really need to think about, if we love what we're doing, why don't we talk about it? Why don't we shout about it? Why don't we smile? Why don't we look at the hours we're working and be really honest? Is it because it does take so much work to do the jobs we've got to do? Or is it just because we'd rather be on the farm than in the kitchen, putting the kids to bed, going to see family, going to see the mother-in-law, the garden centre the weekend? So we have to sort of think a bit about the narrative we use with farming. And also, you know, work, 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 24 hours a day. We have got a culture of the highest stress, the highest suicide, and the worst accidents and health and safety. So we really need to resolve and address that. And we want the next generation. They don't want to work long, long hours. They don't mind putting the hard yard in, don't get me wrong. But they want to be finished at 5 o'clock. They want weekends off. And I truly believe we can make farming that way. And you may say to me, oh, that's well and good, Heather, but who's going to milk the cows? Who's going to lamb the sheep? Yes, there's certain times. But there's bringing a better team in and a work-life balance, and I think we can have that. And then viability. Times of a challenge really makes us look at our business. A lot of us love working with the sheep, the cattle, the land, the machinery. But we've got to learn to love the numbers. You know, when we're out on the land and in the farm with those things, we're earning maybe 15, 25, 30 pounds an hour. But when we're in the office, we're potentially earning 1,500, 500, 3,000 pounds an hour. Because if you've got your fertilizer locked in, you've got your electric and your energy locked in, you manage to get a good grant opportunity, you manage to get an aligned contract. Those are significant, significant differences that that's making to your business. And, you know, now the price of lamb and beef and everything, it's unbelievable. So we really need to know when to buy, when to sell, when to hold, when to let it go. You know, so knowing your business is going to be a really excitable thing for me, because I think people say to me, oh, Heather, you can't do a cash flow, you can't do a budget. There's so much out of our hands. Actually, you have more control over your business than you believe. And it's by getting to know your numbers, particularly if you've got different enterprises, what's working well, what isn't, what different crops, you know, really thinking about it and then think, right, well, okay, we're going to carry this one because we really get a lot of enjoyment out of it, but we'll have to put more money into this because that'll subsidize the costs that we've got coming in. And then in this volatile time, there will be people that are saying, do you know what, time out. We're either going to sell up because we've had enough, we've enjoyed our time, but it's just not for us now. The children don't want to do it. We're going to go and do something else. Or there'll be others that'll say, do you know, I'm old, I don't want to sell it, I want to hold the assets for the next generation in case they want to come back at some time down the line, but I'm going to look for a share farmer, I'm going to rent it out, I'm going to look for a contractor. So there'll also be some of you out there that are thinking, well, you know, we need to subsidize and maybe diversify. So what are these opportunities going to be? And whenever we grow or multiply our business or diversify, it can really distract us from the core business. And sometimes it can go backwards. So what I want to really think about now is how do you simplify your business so that then if these opportunities of growth and diversification come in, you don't become a bigger fool, bigger business, losing more money faster. So really knowing your business, your model, your costings and your margins and everything as well. And then people. Generally in agriculture, we don't really do people. We're quite a silent nation. We just like to get on with the job. People let us down, don't turn up the great things, you know, they don't do it my way. But we really need to invest, trust and grow. We need to invest, trust and grow ourselves. I'm genuinely quite concerned about the well-being of our rural community. It was challenging before COVID, but now, and particularly in these times, it's getting worse. So we need to take time off. We need to rest. Because some people, when it's like this, they just say, well, I'll just work my way through it. But it's not going to go away. So for me, you know, take time off, holidays. Really, really rest and recover, because, you know, I know a lot of us think we are Arnold Schwarzenegger out there, but we do bleed, we break, we get ill. So taking time out, step away out of the business, and then that'll give you time to just rest and look back into the business. And it gives you a fresh set of eyes as well. So in October, we kind of known something was going to happen with the tax. We knew the zero agricultural relief was going to get discussed and it had been on the paper for a while, but I don't think anybody ever dreamt it was going to be as bad as it is and as brutal. So there's this shock, no, they'll, and then denial, they'll change it, they're going to review it, we'll get some discussion with it, and then there's the frustration and we're protesting and we're getting angry. And some people are very, very down and depressed about this. And, you know, whenever there's a shock or there's a grief, that's okay. You know, we don't talk about how to deal with grief. But what you then need to do, and like you guys are now, you tune into, you don't want to speak to people, you take advice, you discuss your situation, you discuss with your family. And then ideally you get more information that gives you some confidence and you start thinking, well, yeah, we can gift it. We can take an insurance policy. We can change our policy. We can actually now have freedom. We can retire. We can do whatever. And generally, after there's been some sort of difficulty, over time, we do look back and we've moved forward. And some people are actually a lot stronger for this. And I may not be popular on this forum, but I feel desperately, desperately sorry for the people that have been caught that are maybe, you know, in their late years and you know, the 7 years looking quite a challenge, or that there's ill health within the family. I think for many people, this is a great opportunity. I think this gifting on death has actually held back a lot of innovation. It's held back a lot of ambition and control and personal drive from a lot of our young farmers. So I'm hoping that for many, many people with the right advice and structure, this should be an opportunity. So succession, you know, what I really find is, you know, there's no google.com. Don't listen to your neighbours. You know, what's right for them may not be right for you. You are unique where you are, what you want to achieve from your farm, your debt, your borrowings, your land values and your family and your abilities and everything as well. So you are completely unique. So don't say, well, what did you do? Or we'll just do that. The next thing you're going to have to do, and I know this does stick in the throat of some people, is you are going to have to invest in some quality legal professional advice. You need to really think about what it is you and your family want, and then you need to speak to your accountant, your lawyer, your bank manager, and they are not mind readers. So you really need to think about where you want to be, where you're going to get there, and how, what options are available to your family, and what are the pros and the cons of different options. And yes, that's going to cost a bit of money, and you may need to take second advice, but trust me, having the right legal professionals on your side can transform your futures. The next thing, it astonishes me how many families have never spoken openly and honestly with their children and with their parents and grandparents. There's an assumption that the children don't want to come back to the farm because they've got good careers elsewhere. There's an assumption that everyone's happy working in the farm and that it's all just going to be fine and everyone just gets along. It's so, so important to sit down. And I personally know it can be difficult. It doesn't always go well, but don't give up. And we'll talk through some different ways of doing that, whether it be, you know, just dipping it in. Don't overdo it, just a little bit here and there, but don't give in, even if you are getting pushback. And I think that's the one thing I really am grateful to Rachel Reeves for, is that she has got families talking, thinking about the future. As much as some of you don't want to, the fear of having to pay tax is actually making people sit down. And then be respectful of the different generational values between everybody as well. So when it comes to it, we need to know what you want. And this is you as the main, you know, the business owner, you as the incoming generation, you as the partners, the in-laws as well. My whole business is a really simple model. It's vision, communication, collaboration. Where are you now? Where do you want to be? And how are you going to get there? What is your dream? What is your goal? What is your ambition? And you need to have that written down. The next thing you need to do is you need to verbalize and communicate that dream, vision, or goal. And I know a lot of people struggle with this. But a vision, a dream, or a goal that is written down and communicated is 80% more likely to come true. People are not mind readers. So unless you verbalize where you want to be, I want to retire, I want to take things easy, I want to move out of the farmhouse, I want to be into the town, I want to pick up some hobbies, I want to be a farmer, I want to farm till the day I die, I just want to grow the business, I want to hand it over in a better position than I took it on. I actually want to retire and I want to split from the business because I'm really not happy working with my family and my siblings, and I want to start on my own. But how do I tell people? Or it might be, oh gosh, all of the children want to come to the farm. Holy shoot, how are we going to manage that? Right, okay, so we've got to expand this business if we're going to make it viable for 2, 3, or 4 families. Okay, so how are we going to do that? What are we going to do? So have that dream and vision, communicate it. Then what do we communicate? How do we communicate? In what format and who to? And then collaboration. I know I've never done anything successful in my own. So who do you need with you to help you achieve your vision, your dream or goal? Ideally, your family, your staff, your accountant, your lawyer, your bank manager, the land agent maybe your neighbours, particularly if you want to sell, but you maybe don't want to advertise. Because for me, the best land, the best stock, the best machinery, the best staff, the best money, finances, they're often never advertised. So if you haven't verbalised your dream, your vision, your goal, how much harder are you making it? Because farming is lonely enough as it is. But suddenly, if you've got people around you that know what you're striving for, they'll be going, hey, Laura, hey, Mark, have you heard about this farm that's coming up for sale? I've been speaking to Fred and, you know, he's hurt his hip and he's just getting over too much for him. I think you guys would be a good match. Let's arrange a meeting. You know, and this is how business in agriculture is done. So if you haven't verbalized it, how much harder are you making achieving your dream and goals? And one farmer said to me after your meeting, Heather, I went home and I shared to my children that I was getting overwhelmed and I was feeling frustrated and I was going to give it up. And they just suddenly said, Dad, we want to be a part of this. Share the workload with us. We'll take it on. And he said, from that moment on, because I thought I had to carry everybody, but from sharing how I was feeling, I suddenly had people around me. And now they're stepping in and making some decisions. They're doing some of the jobs. And he says, I'm loving my farm again, which I thought was just a really, really nice thing. So when you truly believe in what you're doing, it shows. Winners in life are excited about what they're doing and where they're going. And I love to look at farming and think, when did you last see a happy, smiling farmer? Even now when you're getting your sheep and cattle prices in the rings, ooh, it's not enough, Heather. And I would love to get the fun back into farming. And, you know, people that know where they're going, what they're doing, they've got a pride, they've got a passion, they've got an energy. And that is contagious. And people want to work with you and for you. But as we know in life, farming isn't always like that. We have challenges working with family. We have challenges with the government. We have challenges with the weather. And it can just get a bit overwhelming. And yeah, I'm doing really well. And then all of a sudden, there's a hurdle and we get our brakes caught. And so for me, if you were working in any corporate business, you would have a risk strategy. And I want our farming families to not just be farmers, to be business people. Because if we have talked about it, it's part of our strategy. We all have insurance for if we have an accident, a crash, someone runs into us. This is exactly the same, you know, because there's one certainty in life is at some point we are all going to die. We just thankfully don't know when and we don't know what order. So by talking about and thinking, well, what would happen to our business if there was a death? Or someone got hurt and there was a disability, or we got hit by a disease or a disaster, or the marriage didn't break out, what would be the impact to the business? We fell out, there's a disagreement, we want to go different ways, we're not agreed in the direction of the farm, or we fall into debt. How are we going to deal with these scenarios if they come up? And by having a plan and talking about it before they come, it really helps gel and help the farm and the family work forward. So for all of you there, regardless where you are and what age you are and whether you're actually holding the business, you've got the reins, you're at the helms, or whether you're desperate to get in there, or whether you're looking to leave, you know, or you're an in-law or your advisor in part of this, what do you want to have? For me, when I go involved in a meeting and families start talking, really frustrates me when I ask them, what do you want? And they say, I don't know. You know, so we need to know what you want. Where do you want to be? What are you hoping to achieve? What is your legacy? You know, for all these years you put into farm, what is it? Oh, Heather, I want to hand over the farm debt-free. And I was thinking, why? You know, why should any generation receive such a big asset debt-free? You know, where's their skin in the game? Where's their pride and where's their sense of purpose and achievement? If it's just been given to them, what do they, you know, do they know how to handle the numbers, the costs and the volatility that comes with the responsibility? Where do you want to live? I've got to be in the farmhouse. I've got to live on the farm because then, you know, I'm on the job and I can see my kids and family and everything as well. It might be, do you know what, Heather? I work with them, I cannot live with them as well. I've got to be away. I've got to be out of sight. I've got to have some privacy. You know, for me, I love being on the farm, but I need to be able to switch off. When I'm on the farm, I'm hearing noises, tractors, there's people around. I can't rest. I can't relax. And often, you know, when we're retiring, to give that next generation that freedom without feeling they're in like a glass ball all the time, it's often quite a good idea for the retirees to move off farm and get away. Then, you know, you travel to work and you travel back. And having that degree of separation can actually be really, really healthy. And how do you want to spend your time? This is so important. You know, some people, I just want to farm. Others, Heather, I need to be finished at 5 o'clock because I've got a young family. I want to take them to their school events, to their hobbies. I've got other interests. I've maybe got sports. I've maybe got a separate career and things as well. So by you talking openly and honestly about that, then we can think, well, how do we manage that with what everybody else's expectations and aspirations are? And then, you know, once you all know what you want, we've sat and talked around this, we've played about with it, we've drawn some pictures, and we've put it up on a big paper, and we've packed some things that just seemed a bit ridiculous, then we've got to think, right, well, are we going to make this change? Are we really going to strive for it, or are we just going to talk about it? And that's why you need some time frames in mind, because a lot of folks say, oh God, we talk about everything, Heather, we're so open. And then the next generation will say, yeah, well, we talk about, but we haven't actually done anything. And time just goes so fast. So by having some time frames in mind, that if we know that the farm at the moment isn't big enough to sustain two incomes, we can say, right, Johnny, Sarah, you go away for 10 years because I'm not ready to give up the control. I've only got the farm. I need to be able to play with it my way. And you're going to come back in 10 years. So in 2035, we're going to sit down and I'm going to be in a position financially viable to be able to take a step back, and there's going to be a clear role for you. You've grown in confidence. You're going to have a business plan and proposal. The other thing with the time frame in mind is if we want to split the business, sometimes because of the ownership structure and the debt, we might need to pace ourselves. I had one family that had fallen out, and there was 4 children and there was 3 farms, and they were all getting really frustrated. And what they decided was they could split now, but they wouldn't have an awful lot because of the debt. Something would need to be sold. But if they could knuckle down and work together for 10 years, take on more debt and buy a 4th farm and really work together, they would have a greater asset to split. And that's actually what they did. And they have split up, but because they'd got that agreed vision and goal, and they all had a sense of purpose and achievement to get at the end of it, they've actually got fantastic relationships, and they're now still working together, although they've got their individual businesses. The next thing you know is you need to know your plan B. When are you going to retire? And how much money are you going to need to retire? Because being able to retire financially independent gives so much freedom and liberation. But some people might say, well, okay, Sarah, you're going to get the farm, but part of that is you get the farm, but you have to keep me. And so we need to talk about, well, what will that look like? What are the numbers of that? Can we keep 2 families? Do we need to work away? Do we need to grow the business? And can we afford to bring someone in? Can we afford to retire somebody out? So again, the sooner the numbers are done, we can start thinking about, well, what are the options? Amazes me how many couples haven't even spoken openly about this, let alone with the family. So when will you retire? Thinking about your retirement plan, when do your children hope to retire? How much money do you need to live on when you are independent from the farm? You know, so you've got your own house, your own costs, your own insurance, your vehicles and everything. How much money will you need to be able to be financially independent? And this is a great exercise to do, because I love it. It varies from someone says, oh, Heather, I've struggled to spend 20,000. Someone else saying, oh, Heather, I'd need 90, 100,000. And I also think no wonder families fall out, because if 2 siblings, one's aspiring to retire on 20,000 and another one's aspiring to retire on 100,000, do you think they'll be driven and motivated and take the same risks? And likewise, parents and children. You know, that's why often, but no, we need to invest, we need to grow. But why? You know, we've got enough, we're okay. And it's because we've got different values and different drivers and different goals. So have a meeting next time the kids are all home for college. Sit down, have an agenda. Don't overbig it. Start gently. You know, this is what we want. This is what we're thinking about. What are you thinking about? you know, where are you at the moment? Are you enjoying what you're doing? Are you not enjoying what you're doing? I think we need to start talking about this. This is how we think it could look, but we really want to know what you're thinking. For some families, because home is so busy, they actually need to go away. And this can be fun. You know, we hear all the negative stories. Trust me, it is not always a battlefield. Yes, sometimes it can be, but many, many times it isn't. It can be awkward. I don't disagree with that. But the sooner you start and put some structure and format in, generally families tend to look forward to these meetings, as hard as that may seem. They generally do. And I've got some families that have an annual family summit where they go away, they make a nice weekend of it, they set the goals and everything, they review what they've done, and then we put some roles and responsibilities in, and we put some targets in there as well. So when I run my family meetings, I want to know who's involved in the family. And, you know, this is a fairly straightforward family, but sometimes there's a few red crosses, there's been a few deaths, there's been some remarriages, there's been some divorces, there may be an out of marriage family member that some people know about, some people don't. But let's be honest, let's get everyone in here that is involved in the legacy. So it could be multiple generations, because, you know, some people still, we haven't had that generation sorted yet either. Then I want to know, what are all the assets? And again, people are talking about how tight and hard farming is at the moment, but I think a lot of it is we've got dragged into this negative narrative. But when we put down, what are all the assets? What do we own? What are we building? It's amazing what people forget. I genuinely feel oxygen coming in the room. Then I want to know, what is the valuation of it? And you've got to remember the debt. That's really, really key. So some families will say, well, we've got these family members, we've got three children, and mum and dad sometimes say, well, only one can get the farm because the farm's not viable. So we know the daughter is the farmer, she's going to take on the farm, and it's worth 3 point something million. But the two brothers, unfortunately, you know, we can't give them all of that. So they're going to get less. Now, what would be traditional would be the non-farming children may get some of the properties, and maybe the savings and pensions. And yes, it's less, but there's an understanding that, you know, for the farm to be viable, it needs to keep going. But they can put some caveats in that in case the daughter decided to sell or decided she didn't want to farm anymore, that there could be some clawbacks that if the farm was sold within, say, 5 years, the two brothers would get a percentage of that value. And then if it's sold over 10 years, it would be a decreasing sliding scale. What I've often seen as well is somebody may say, well, look, there's the chance of maybe building some properties because we've got some land on the side of a village, or we may have some diversification opportunities coming in. Let's ring fence that and put that under a separate structure so that then if that development does come, the non-farming children can have some of that increased revenue in there as well. Other times I've actually seen mum and dad say, do you know what? I've got three kids, Heather. I love them equally. It's got to be a third, a third, a third. And, you know, sometimes that's accepted. No, that's fair enough. At least I know other times there's an outrage. How on earth can I farm? I've done everything for this farm. I thought it was all me. How am I meant to farm with just 100 acres? So what I see in that scenario is, okay, ideally before the child comes back to the farm, that's the time to have the conversations. But if the child's already been on the farm for, say, 20, 30 years, we sort of say, let's go back to the day that they started adding value to the business and really been a constructive part of the business. Let's value everything from that day. And that is the valuation that on the second death of the parents, that the farming child has to pay out their non-farming siblings. And you could even have a timeline in that they've got, so say it could be 2 million they've got to pay out. It could be over 10 years. So it means that the farming child knows what is ahead of them. And it still allows them that drive, that motivation to build that business, because everything they grow on top of that valuation, and they also get the land appreciation as well, is, you know, for their family unit. So there's no right or wrong, but there is many, many scenarios of how you can split businesses up and pay non-siblings out. You know, you could even take life insurance policies. So for this one particular family, what they did was they took a life insurance policy because they knew the farming child wouldn't be able to pay out the money. So they've got a policy that on their death is going to pay the non-farming kids out. But it's really, really key if you have a pension or a life insurance policy that you don't want to go in to your estate, it's to go to a particular person or two people that they are actually named on that policy. That is absolutely key. So moving on, conscious of time, you know, how well do you know your business and what are the implications and the risks to your business if there's a sudden death? So if you're a sole trader and you die, sadly, everything closes. The bank's locked. Everything is closed until your will and your estate is all sorted. Likewise with a partnership, if you have got a partnership and there's only two of you in a partnership, one of you dies, that partnership is dissolved. You become a sole trader and potentially the bank account is frozen as well until probate and everything is all sorted. So not only are you going through shock and grief, you can't actually get your business moving. This can also happen if you have multiple partners in a business, but the partner that's died owned all the land separately and the land had a charge because there was a lot of borrowing in the partnership. And until they stayed sorted again, it's really, really key to understand your structure. If you've got a partnership, have partnership agreements, really, really important. Because then if someone dies, what happens to their shares? Do they stay in the partnership with the other partners or do they go to their estate that can be split elsewhere? So then you could have other people having a partnership of the business. Yeah, are you a partnership of the movable or of the fixed? And partnership agreements are really, really clever because in there you can say who owns land, who doesn't own land, how things are moved about, different share options as well. But banks are actually sometimes even freezing bank accounts if you haven't got a partnership agreement, even when everyone's alive, when they're doing an audit, because it's really, really messy. So I'd urge you, understand your business structure and get partnerships in place because a partnership agreement top trumps a will. Trust. There was a lot of folk thinking, oh, we'll just put our business into a trust because that'll protect it. Really get good advice about this. Trusts for the right reason are really helpful, particularly if you've got physically or mentally impaired family members, you want to look after them, or you're ill, you're going to die, your family are young, you want to protect the assets there. But if you put your land and farm into a trust, it's basically like a tenant there that the farmers can't borrow on the land assets. It can be quite costly, and we're not altogether sure now as well whether they are going to be as tax efficient because there's the looking that they're going to review trusts coming up as well. Limited companies open up an awful lot of opportunity again with your share agreements. You can have share A, B, C, D. If you want to put children, if you've got private education, university fees and things like that, you can bring your children in as a 1% shareholder. They can have no voting rights, but they can get a dividend paid out with funds their things. Yeah, limited companies. So really understanding, have you got the right company structure for you? Tenancies agreements, you know, leaving. I was at a meeting last night and, you know, what notice do you need to give your landlord if you die? And don't just assume the next generation will automatically get the tenancy. You know, there's a lot of criteria to fill. And depending how you verbalise what your tenancy is, you know, sometimes you can have 20 days, 25 days, and other times you can have a year to let your landlord know. Pre and post notes, so calling them asset protection agreements. You know, I think there's a lot of room for these. A lot of people are looking at these now, particularly with these new changes to the tax. But please not on the day of the wedding. You know, it's important that people know early on that there's an asset protection agreement. So, you know, coming up now, regardless of whether you're farming or not farming, even for your own domestic arrangement, you know, you must have a will. A basic will is better than no will. It is incredibly selfish to die without a will. And it causes such a fallout. Intestate is a horrible state for your family to have to leave. But it's really important your will complements your partnership agreement. And think about if you've got children under 18, if you die, who would be the guardians? Lasting power of attorneys, this is as important as your will. So wills are when you're dead, power of attorney are when you're alive, but you're incapacitated. People think you've got Alzheimer's, dementia, you're on a life support machine. Actually, you could just be on a holiday. You could have been kicked by a cow. You could have concussion. You could have COVID. You're just incapacitated for a short time. So who would make the decisions for your business, your property, your finances? And then who would make the decisions for your health, your well-being and your care? And it might be the same person, it might be different people, but if you've got older family members at the moment, it's so, so key that you have these in place. Property deeds, who owns them, who bought them, whose name are they in, what did you buy them for and what year? Really important. Loans and mortgages, how much debt and borrowing have we got? How well's the farm doing? Bank account. Who's got all the bank account information? Where's all your passwords? Please write down passwords, login details, all the different companies and everywhere you work for. You know, get these written down, this how-to manual. Oh my God, your family will be so appreciative if you are not here and there's a sudden death. What's your debts and liabilities? Who are your lawyers, accountants? Where is the will? And make sure the will is signed. Oh, wills. If you've got a mirrored will, really look at that, because it used to be you handed over your business on death because then you've got the uplift and you had a mirrored will. So I died. I gave my assets to Laura. Laura died. She gave her assets to me. When we're both dead, our estate then gets dissolved, split, as according to our wishes. But actually, to get the maximum of your 3 million allowance, if I have a mirrored will and I give my 1.5 million to Laura, that means then she's 3 million. So she's over her allowance. So we lose 1 million. So ideally, we would have to change our wills so that I give my half of my estate down to my children or whoever I want to inherit. And then when Laura dies, she gives her half down. And that means that we maximize our tax allowance. Also, stopcocks, meters, drains, where are they? All these amazing things that are just in people's minds. So in summary, create a plan, take advice, keep control, please communicate with your family. You will have to nag, draw and push to make these things happen. Wills, power of attorney, know your numbers. And for some, you know, you can have these meetings, no problem. But for many, many people, you will need to use a facilitator. I'm conscious of my time, but it's really important you bring a strong team of people around you that radiate, lift you up, motivate you, challenge you. And be aware of the drains, the negative, the criticizers that hold you back. And this is really difficult if they're, and if it is so miserable, so stressful, so awkward, how long do you stick it out for? When do you walk away? When do you do it yourself and be in charge of your own destiny? But also be aware, are you a radiator or are you a drain? Thank you.